Hello, hello, hello.
And welcome to a supersized public affair edible radio event here. I'm John Lendorf from Radio Nibbles, and this is our second edition of this very cool thing that we're doing here, and we're going to do it every Thursday on KGNU.
Until the end of time as we know it.
Yes, my guests are Daniel Asher. He's the executive chef of Ashkara River and Woods and multiple other dining establishments in Boulder and in the vicinity. And also with us today is, well, it's Fun Guy Day here at KGNU. Griffin Giordano is here from Project Umami.
Good morning, John. Thank you so much for
having
me.
Good morning. And he is Boulder's sole scratch tempeh maker. And also here, Justin Killing from Mycocosm, mushroom grower deluxe.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. Stoked to be here.
Yes, there is fungus among us.
And why don't you start things off?
Yeah, well, thanks everyone for joining us this morning. Super excited. These two gentlemen have impacted me profoundly with their craft and exceptional expression of magical wellness-based ingredients. Justin, you and I met 2 years ago?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we actually live near each other up in the mountains, and he grows the most stunning mushrooms I've ever encountered. We've been featuring at our restaurants in town since shortly after we met. And they're absolutely incredible. And then Griffin, I literally ran into randomly at Tundra Food Service. Awesome local restaurant supplier, open to the public as well. For those of you that don't know, great great local restaurant, smallware supplier. If you need a whisk, a wooden spoon, an awesome pan, pop into Tundra. But I was there getting some stuff for the restaurants, and I overheard Griffin talking about a plant-based project, and he has Project Umami, which is incredible, beautiful tempeh, some versions of which highlight some local farms, like White Mountain Quinoa in Moscow, which is on our menu at, I think, all of our restaurants at this point, and some great chickpeas from the Skokin crew at Black Cat Farm, which is awesome. So excited to dive in with you guys. Tempeh is one of the greatest plant-based expressions of excellence I've encountered in cooking, and Project Umami is the best. So how's it been starting a tempeh company in Boulder?
Awesome, yeah. You know, it's been great. I figured this area would be receptive to the product. You know, you a lot of times you get, what is tempeh? What is this? And
what is tempeh?
So the short answer is tempeh is a fermented plant protein. It's also a mushroom made in a manner similar to cheese or yogurt. Of course, we get much more complicated than that if we like, but that is a really great way to start out. You know, kind of quick answer of what tempeh is. Of course, from a more in-depth perspective, we're growing mycelium. So much like other mushrooms around, a legume, grain, and seed substrate to make that substrate, to make those ingredients healthier for us to eat and easier for us to digest.
So it's more bioavailable, the nutrients and the grains, by that process.
Exactly.
And how's that different from what you do with mushrooms, or how is it similar, I guess?
Well, it's similar in the fact that we're culturing a fungus onto a substrate media.
Inoculation.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The difference is our sort of harvest is in mushroom cultivation. Our harvest is the fruit body, which is in effect the reproductive aspect of the mushroom. Whereas you're harvesting the mycelium, which is actually the larger body of the mushroom. Yeah.
That's great. And you're both at the Boulder County Farmers Market.
Yes.
Right in town.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how do you use their products in your restaurant? What are the dishes?
Well, Justin's mushrooms, we've got a beautiful Rocky Mountain trout dish at River and Woods that we take mainly the pink oyster mushrooms we've been using, and then we've gotten in a few different other lion's mane and a few other types of oyster mushrooms. We put them in the smoker for about 35 minutes, and then pick them up in a saute pan with olive oil and organic tamari. So it's almost like a soy, you know, I call it like a soy butter. In essence, and it's absolutely magical, and that's on that's placed on top of the trout, and we're using it in multiple dishes. We have tons of mushrooms on the menu at Ashkara, and specifically a new dish is a coconut milk broth, and then beautiful, call them drunken mushrooms, sautéed in red wine. With an herb oil on top. So that, I mean, and it's been so well received. People are obsessed with mushrooms. If you're into mushrooms, you're way into mushrooms.
And the tempeh?
The tempeh I've just been working with. He gave me a few packages to sample and play with, and we've just been messing around with them in the kitchen. But I want to do a dish featuring the tempeh in a Middle Eastern style.
Lovely.
Like we have chicken shawarma, which is one of our best sellers on the menu at Ashkara, but I want to do kind of a
tempeh shawarma?
Tempeh shawarma, yeah, exactly, which I think would be really cool. Yeah.
Wow.
Which I think that would be super fun. But yeah, I mean, to have, you know, these, what you guys are doing in town is such a necessary part of a vibrant, connected local food system, you know, and specifically pushing the agenda of, you know, a plant-based lifestyle, being aware of how to eat vegetarian, how to create engaging experiences where vegetarian ingredients become as craveable and delicious as, you know, regular carnivore based items. For me as a cook is one of my highest priorities. It's easy to make you know, a piece of steak delicious. You throw some salt and pepper on it and sear it, you know, but what do you have to do to a mushroom to make it craveable and memorable? What do you have to do to tempeh to have someone text their friend about it?
Personally, I recommend chicken fried lion's mane.
Oh,
you know, because chicken fried with gravy makes everything better.
It does. It's true.
Hey, folks, we have this fungi crew here, and we're happy to have your calls.
Yes, indeed. That number, if you would like to reach us in the Boulder studio, is 303-442-4242. We do have a volunteer by the phones who can patch you through to the board, and you can speak to any of our three guests and John Lindorf.
And tell me a little more about the tempeh, because you have a lot of different varieties that are, you know, I mean, when you see the tempeh, if you go to Nude Foods, you know, you can see it covered in the mold and the...
Wow, it looks like a block of huitlacoche.
Actually.
Well, and not unrelated, right?
Yeah.
Huitlacoche is
corn smut.
Yeah, corn smut. That's basically...
It's so good.
Corn that's got infected with the...
Talk about a misunderstood ingredient. One of the most delicious things ever.
Delicious mold. Huitlacoche is
amazing. Yeah, it's delicious mold. Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing that has interested me lately is the part that mushroom growers and producers are playing in regenerative gardening and farming. And you were saying, you know, the mycology necessarily involves creating a lot of compost.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I think that's one of the key aspects in soil health is a healthy microbiome that allows us to recycle nutrients. And I think it's traditionally one of the things that's been pretty overlooked in modern times, right? It's like we're really good with the composition in our culture. We're really good at creating things. We're really good at optimizing things. But when it comes to that recirculative principle of like of rebuilding soil, it's something that right. I think...
So you're producing a lot of compost every week.
Yeah, yeah. We put out about 4,000 pounds of compost every week.
So yep. Who does it go to? What kind of people?
It goes to a number of local farms. We have some folks doing sort of regenerative agroforestry projects that, you know, they're doing kind of multi-story food forest plantings where they're doing kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cool.
Generational planting, right? So they'll try to create stories of an ecosystem so that it can be self-maintaining and, you know, be able to retain its own moisture, recycle its own nutrients, and then introducing that mushroom media to the soil kind of brings that quality so it can break down all of the slash and everything.
That's amazing.
Sounds very un-American. It's like a plot, you know? You're supposed to just take dirt and put chemicals in it and grow stuff, right?
No. Right. That would be the cycle of depletion that we've gotten very good at, and now we need to get really good at the cycle of regeneration and renewal.
I wasn't advocating that.
Of course, yes, of course, of course.
I'm of the understanding that compost in Boulder, at least the compost that is picked up at homes, is taken more than 100 miles away to an industrial composting facility. Where does your compost come from, and where, you know, how is it processed?
Our compost comes from Broomfield, so about 10 minutes down the road here, and it's just processed by mushrooms. So they take that substrate media, which is largely a combination of different agricultural waste products, and they break it down for us and just turn it right on into compost.
But for example, does it get hot enough to be able to process these like compostable spoons and forks and?
At current, it does not, and the only reason for that is scale. So right now, we're in an industrial area. We're working on moving out to a farm property, at which point we can actually amass large enough to create those kind of temperature that are needed to break down those things, yeah.
But would that farm property be within Boulder County, or is it in Broomfield?
No, yeah, we're looking Boulder County. We're looking up Hygiene Lions area.
And what are the permit restrictions on that? Because I know that there was an attempt to open a composting facility in Boulder County that was voted down.
Really?
It was going to be this is right before I moved here, so I'm not completely clear on all the details, but John, perhaps you know?
It's a NIMBY thing, from my understanding. It was that, well, I mean, we're all in favor of composting and not wasting and not filling up the landfill, but I don't want you composting billions of stuff, you know, piles of stuff near my house. And so, you know, gradually, so I have significant questions about where the, you know, if you're putting out compost materials in Boulder County, whether it actually makes it to a farm in a sustainable way, but
sure.
But what
I think a lot of it is based on direct relationships as opposed to going through any city-related program in general.
But what I love about this also, I've talked a lot about reducing waste, farm waste and home kitchen waste, and I like the fact that this is part of that recycling process, that you're taking things that might be thrown away and turning them into.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's just part of a robust local agriculture system. In the same way that when you're cooking, you're trying to piece together these different constituents and bring cohesion and bring connection between those flavor profiles and everything else. You know, we need to do the same as people in the agricultural community, by which we can, you know, harvest one another's resources and make sure that we're kind of optimizing things in our local context. Mm-hmm. You know, and obtaining yields every step along the way there.
Correct. Yeah, 100%. And Boulder actually has a phenomenal zero waste program initiative for the restaurant community specifically. So I do want to give that a shout out, because we're doing that in all of our kitchens, and
so how does
they
that,
do a great job.
Talk to that a little, just for a minute.
It's a phenomenal program to create actionable steps, you know, within restaurants to have, you know, single stream recycling go in the right direction and have everyone educated about it, have in-house composting, and to know what that looks like when it's healthy and functioning properly, and to minimize literally, you know, garbage. So optimally, which, you know, I feel really good about, is our garbage dumpster stays very, very empty. Our compost is full constantly, and our recycling is full constantly. So it's, you know, a process of making sure that things get repurposed and reutilized in an intelligent manner. And Griffin, your wrappers for your tempeh are compostable. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
All the way down to the adhesive on the
sticker. Oh, for real? The glue?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And
that's awesome, actually. Yeah. And a hard thing to do.
It is,
so
yes.
Kudos to you for doing that.
And labeling, as I understand it, you know, labeling is difficult. You know, glues and labels and things that... It doesn't matter if you have paper that's compostable if there's a label stuck to it.
Same with fruit.
That isn't.
Yeah, all those organic veggies that have stickers on them, the stickers are not compostable.
Right. Well, we have our first caller, Gio. Good morning, Gio.
Yes. Good morning, KGNU listeners and community at large. And
good morning.
Hosts of this extravaganza of good eats.
Yes.
And you have a question?
Well, just wanted to chip in a little bit about, you know, the debate of plant-based and tempeh. I love tempeh.
Go ahead.
That it's a soy-based product that?
So I can speak to that a little bit. You know, as it turns out, what makes tempeh tempeh
moldified.
Sure, exactly. Yep, enveloped in a mycelium network.
Consumed, literally, straight out of the package.
But not strictly soy.
That's right. As it turns out, what makes tempeh tempeh is not the soybean, it's the tempeh starter. The tempeh starter is a filamentous fungus spore cultivated from the air in Indonesia over 600 years ago, originally onto hibiscus leaves. The Latin name is Rhizopus oligosporus, and that's what we're using to create tempeh. You know, so in Southeast Asia, in Indonesia specifically, where tempeh is from, the soybean is the traditional substrate.
But you use lentils, quinoa, what else?
Black beans.
Black beans and sunflower seeds, pinto beans and millet, yellow and green split peas and chickpeas, and as you said, John, quinoa. Oh.
Which is super cool.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, really.
I guess I'll just say I'll be the Zane for today.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you very much. And we welcome your calls here at KGNU.
Again, that number is 303-442-4242.
Talk a little bit about where you source the ingredients for the tempeh.
Certainly. So doing our best wherever possible to source locally and in some cases hyperlocally, we have one offering, our pinto bean and millet tempeh, where we source the pinto beans and the millet from a Denver distributor, and those ingredients are Colorado grown. The pinto beans are coming from the Dolores County area from Dove Creek, and the millet is coming from Sterling. Also in communications or in discussions with some pinto bean farmers in Hotchkiss, as sourcing directly from the farmer has a lot of different benefits related to freshness, quality, and you know, supply and things of that nature.
Fair trade.
Yep, exactly. And also highlighting our what I'll refer to as a hyperlocal offering, which is our I really enjoy putting the names of the farm in the name of the product itself, calling it Black Cat Chickpea and White Mountain Farm Quinoa Tempeh. As Dan, you were talking about earlier, you carry the White Mountain Farm quinoa in your restaurants. It is an exemplary quinoa, some of the best quinoa. But you can just cook it up plain.
It's
don't
exceptional.
Even need salt. And some wonderful, wonderful chickpeas grown here in Boulder County from Black Cat Farms. You make tempeh with substrates of these calibers, and you can see the difference night and day. I sent a photo to a master fermenter. They have several books. Kirsten Shockey is her name, and she remarked, it goes to show that this is a living food and the substrate matters, you know, because just looking side by side, we did an experiment with the organic chickpeas from the distributor and the organic chickpeas from Boulder County that are obviously grown in living soil, and it's just wonderful to see what that results in.
That's cool.
So you're saying it is beyond organic. Which is a nice thing, right?
That's a great way to put it.
Right.
Yes.
Organic is wonderful, but not all organic ingredients are equal. There's fresher ones. And
there's industrial-scaled ones. Right, exactly.
I have a mushroom question. So now that the rains have finally started...
Which were desperately needed.
Somewhat.
Yes.
I'm wondering, are there any local mushroom hunts or just walks to go look for mushrooms?
Ooh, you know, I've got to imagine that there are. I got to say, I'm a little bit too busy growing them. Farmer's work is never done, so
right.
I made it out one day last year, which was amazing. I think we pulled 100 pounds of porcini in a couple hours. But
wow, and that's awesome. And so you moved from the Pacific Northwest.
I did, yeah. I moved back, yeah. This is home. But yeah.
Which is great,
and
yeah.
Exactly where did you find these mushrooms? No.
100 pounds of porcini. What was the geo-coordinates of that again?
Above 10,000 feet.
And you'll find if you ever ask foragers where they find things, they are very dodgy about it unless you're a close personal friend. Right now is, of course, asparagus season, and you'll find them growing wild along fence posts
wild asparagus
all over
great.
Boulder County. But the forage people, they're fanatics. They know where those stalks are coming up, and they also... There's mushroom foraging places, but I will look into that and pass it along.
And you know, we didn't have a chance to discuss this beforehand because we were on the air, and I was on the air with Morning Magazine. But I unearthed, speaking of foraging, from my archives, a piece that I did about foraging for mushrooms. It's more than 10 years old, this piece, but would you like to hear it?
Sure.
Sure. Okay. Well, this is from Mexico. I moved here from Oaxaca, and there, as you're talking about foraging, there are some very tightly guarded places up in the indigenous held territories of the Sierra Norte Mountains. And in Oaxaca, there is a tourism project where these communities control the tourism that goes through there. You know, it's not like in the Yucatan or anything where, you know, these big resort consortiums, you know, take over. And they have this annual mushroom foraging festival. So, yeah, so this is just a report back from that. It's standing room only on this bus coming from Oaxaca City. Many of these passengers are headed to the mountain village of Guajimaloyas for the Mushroom Festival. Soon after arrival, we're split into groups of 10, each one with a local guide. The groups will compete in a contest to fill a large basket with as many different types of mushrooms as possible. Each participant has paid a registration fee, and the proceeds go to the town's ecotourism project. Local guide Maria Luisa Martinez leads my group. Immediately after entering a lush pine forest, we encounter our first mushroom.
Es un hongo amanita, pero este hongo no es comestible.
Maria Luisa explains what we have found is a toxic amanita mushroom. After cutting the specimen at the stem with a blunt knife, Maria Luisa gives us our first lesson on foraging protocol.
Cuando un hongo se arranca, se tapa.
When you pick a mushroom, you have to cover up the spot where it was, especially if it's an edible variety, because the spores have already fallen there. So you have to cover it back up so that the mushrooms will sprout again there the next year.
There are 10 of us walking through a pine forest, all with our eyes on the ground, looking for mushrooms. They just found a mushroom that they call a squirrel mushroom because the mushrooms are eaten by squirrels. They're only for squirrels. Humans don't eat them. Soon after, we find a scaly purple-black mushroom with gills under its cap. Maria Luisa says it's a killer, like the amanita we found earlier.
Some others are also fatally toxic, but you can eat some poisonous mushrooms and not die immediately. Rather, you suffer pain and die later. There's no cure.
4 hours later, all of the groups head into a clearing with our baskets loaded down with mushrooms. Edible, poisonous, and hallucinogenic. We lay out the contents of our baskets onto wooden tables. Two young judges look over the mushrooms on display from each group. Our group weighed in with 38 different species. The winning group had a whopping 82 different species in their basket. Pablo Ruiz happened upon the mushroom gathering by accident. He was hiking in the forest with his son and was pleasantly surprised to find the normally secluded meadow filled with people and mushrooms.
It was amazing how many different varieties of mushrooms there were. So it was like a very interesting junction of people, all community people, people from the city, all joined together to hike on the mountains and pick the mushrooms and all the culture that is around that activity, no?
This year was said to be the worst in a while for mushroom foraging due to a drought that's been affecting most of Mexico. Despite that, the forest still had enough mushrooms to supply a communal buffet the next day, featuring 5 different dishes, all based on, you guessed it, mushrooms. For the World Vision Report, I'm Shannon Young in Guajimaloyas, Oaxaca.
After much rain and wind, spring is here. Get ready for the KGNU annual plant sale, Sunday, June 5th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Hundreds of great plants are donated by our passionate volunteers and local supporters. Master gardeners will be on hand to discuss all things garden. Join us on June 5th for Plants, Plants, Plants in KGNU's backyard, located at 4700 Walnut Street, Boulder. More information at kgnu.org.
And you are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. We are here with John Lindorf and special guests for a supersized Radio Nibbles. We are taking your calls, and we actually have a caller on the line. You want to just go straight to that?
Let's go straight to that.
Listening. All right. Good morning, Scott in Boulder.
Well, we've all heard of, you know, the supersize me phenomenon that's sweeping the nation and the world.
So you have a question about mushrooms?
Yes. Gathering them in the field, as it were, and distinguishing between the hallucinogenic and or toxic variety, you know, you could then get into the debate of toxic and hallucinogenic flowers, such as morning glories, for example.
Sure.
Which in Latin, I believe, is known as the Ipomea violacea.
Okay, we'll have one of our guests take that question.
I think in terms of
medicinal.
In terms of like identification, it is a very delicate art, and there's a number of factors that you have to become very well acquainted with. And I know that there are people leading educational events in that respect, but you know, luckily most of the varieties that are edible here in Colorado don't have a tremendous amount of toxic lookalikes. Maybe save for the aspen bolete, which still isn't going to kill you or anything. There's a huge variety of factors that can be utilized to determine.
But the biggest thing about foraging is that you have to go with someone who has it in their blood, their
deep knowledge.
Right. So my first experience with mushroom foraging was this was a long time ago, you know, when I was a kid. I grew up in Massachusetts, and we knew this Italian family, the Ilarios, and they had an aunt who was from Sicily, very short, gnarly woman, dressed in black, tiny, and, you know, kind of quiet. But we went out into this park that we'd been to 100 times before, and she said, "Well, come here, look at this." And she went out into the trees and started looking under the leaves, and she said, no, that one's bad. Don't, not that one. Oh, that one. Yeah, we can cook with that one. And it was so unfamiliar. It was like going to an alien planet. But that's really what you need.
And the stakes are high. You don't want to mess around and eat the wrong mushroom.
Well, you were saying for that for the piece you did on mushrooms in Mexico, that your group collected 38 different species of mushrooms?
Yes.
So you better know what the differences are amongst
that's
them
remarkable.
And the purposes that they're used for.
No, and the guide was just amazing because she was able to say, well, look, this kind of looks like this one, but it's a false, you know, whatever. And so, I mean, it was
you look
just
at the gills and you
Yeah.
And I think it's a very cool kind of like tradition, or you could say like form of ancestral knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, getting oriented to place and you know, having that knowledge passed down
by elders
that have been in the practice of, you know, becoming oriented in their natural environment
it's great you mentioned that, because you speak about that, like, indigenous knowledge keeping and how that lends itself to, you know, being able to do things like your tempeh and cultivate mushrooms, so that there's that, you know, awareness of how things have been done and the advancements of what we do now and how those things connect is super profound.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really funny. So we do a lot of climate kind of control, but nevertheless, species always still grow despite our best efforts. They always grow the best when they would naturally grow. They can tell, no matter how well we attenuate our environments, they can tell when they ought to be growing.
So the moisture, the heat, all that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention that I was talking during Radio Nibbles about food events coming up. I just mentioned the local ones, but there's a bunch of events around the state. One you can look out for is the Eagle Mushroom and Wild Food Festival, which is in August. And there's foraging and national mycological experts and meals featuring wild foods. And so that's pretty cool. But there's also this event I mentioned. There's an oyster mushroom
workshop
on May 7th at Benevolence Orchard. But there's also this dinner coming up. Justin, maybe you can talk a little bit. It's May 21st for Slow Food at the Left Hand Grange.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I as far as I understand, we're going to be putting together a dinner that's going to be a fundraiser. There's going to be auctions where you're able to get different products like different mushrooms, grow kits, things like that. There's going to be a panel of chefs and people in the field that are going to be answering questions and talking about all things mushrooms, and all the dishes are going to be centered around.
Right, and it's with Patrick Balcom, who's the executive chef at Faro Restaurant, which actually just won Best New Restaurant in Boulder County in the Boulder Weekly. The other person that's going to be there, I just mentioned this because we all have a diverse interests. One of the mushroom growers is Jake Plummer, who has a mushroom company called Umbo Mushrooms. Do you know him?
I don't, actually.
Are you a football fan?
I'm not really up in it now.
So it's of two worlds. Jake Plummer was the quarterback of the Denver Broncos.
Oh, he's growing mushrooms now?
He's growing mushrooms, and he's gone into a completely different dimension.
Realm.
And he's a passionate advocate for them. And,
that's great.
So I think it's very cool because it.
Wow.
You know what? It's a common problem with a lot of our political discussions and everything else that we're preaching to the choir. We're talking to people that already agree with us, and to reach the mainstream. Like to introduce tempeh, you have to hope that
it's a leap of faith.
No, you need influencers.
Well, yeah, that too. You know? Well, speaking of that, you're also launching a chickpea miso, which I'd love to hear more about.
Yeah, really excited about the miso. You know, it was meant to be a product that was going to be easier for us to produce. You know, there's a lot of love and care that goes into the tempeh, and as it turns out, miso is probably several times more complex.
Is it?
What makes the tempeh.
Tell people what miso is.
So miso is similar to tempeh, is made using another filamentous fungus from Japan that we grow on grain to make something that people are familiar with, at least from a word perspective, is koji. So miso is actually made using koji.
And most people have had it in soup.
That's
probably the most familiar form.
And it's also one of the most significant forms of umami.
That's right, yes.
That meaty savoriness.
It's also my cat's name.
Oh, is it? That's right. There you go. Talk about full circle conversations. This is great.
Umami.
Yeah, oh, koji.
Koji. That's a little shorter.
Same thing with miso, with tempeh in terms of the soy. Traditionally made with soybeans, can also be made with any other legumes. And you know, right now we're just using chickpea. We also intend to have a black bean miso and a split pea miso. And continue to get creative with it.
That's fantastic. You said the flavor profile of this is super intense.
So the one we did most recently, we really packed with some fermentation power, and it's turned out to be what people are calling tangy. And I noticed that it wasn't the word that I came up with originally, but I'm calling it a sweet and sour miso. So a little bit different than what you would get at the store.
Sure. That is great.
So I have a question. I was recently given some miso, and I don't really know how to prepare it because I just don't know. So give me some suggestions,
Dan?
Some recipes, please.
Yeah. I mean, you got what, like just a tub of miso paste?
Yes.
In essence?
Yes.
I mean, it's one of my favorite things to do is to simply make a beautiful sauce, which you can literally do a miso sauce over tempeh or over
tofu. What do you put in that sauce for the non?
Yeah, like from the tub, like what do I do with it?
You can use a little bit of, you basically want to thin it out. You want to use some kind of a stock or a broth. You can use either a vegetable broth. You can also go in any direction of a plant-based milk, oat milk, soy milk, almond milk, anything in that category. I would bring the liquid to a low simmer and then drop the miso in the paste and whatever intensity makes sense. Obviously, the number one rule for cooking is always be tasting, ABT.
And you can always put more in. can't take it out.
There you go.
So,
see?
And miso is...
It's like water with bread, yeah.
Miso is such an incredibly concentrated flavor.
It's so intense and so healing and nourishing. It's one of the best things you can have when you're not feeling well.
There's other things you can do with it where you're not actually tasting the miso, you're tasting the umami. And one of them that I have done that's great is to put a little bit of miso into spaghetti sauce.
Oh.
Instead of salting it, instead of...
That's a good trick.
And it gives us, you know, that depth of flavor. And the other thing we talked about, you know, we're talking about meatiness in plant-based foods. All these new plant-based foods from mushroom and corn and everything else, I mean, they're trying to duplicate meatiness. Lately, because I've been doing all these mushroom stories, I've run into lion's mane for the first time. I really had some around that I could mess around with. Lion's mane is like
amazing.
Big, solid ball.
Puffball.
But not soft. I mean, it's
correct.
You can
dense,
and you can cut it into steaks. And you can cut it in very thin strips and saute it. You can add it to a spaghetti sauce or a curry or something, and it gives it this body and meatiness. Actually,
when we originally on the opening menu at Ashkara in Boulder was your lion's mane.
That's right. Yeah.
Marinated in a shawarma spice on skewers and grilled, and people's mind. I mean, I was talking to so many tables that were vegetarian, saying you gave me chicken. I ordered the mushrooms, and I literally had to show them. the whole mushrooms. So they could see the texture.
We're trying to think of practical things. Like, you have some miso. What do you do with it? If you want to get beyond the white, you know, the white button mushrooms you see at the store, are the white bread of the mushroom world. There's very little mushroom there. And so I think of these and maybe oysters as kind of the stepping stone to more, trying other ones.
Certainly, yeah, yeah. I think, you know, oyster mushrooms are amazing because they're very versatile, and somebody that's not familiar with a bunch of kind of the depths of the more exotic flavor profiles and pungencies.
They're less intimidating, would you say?
Yeah, they're less, you know, you can throw them in a pan with some, some oil and some diced shallots, you know, splash of white wine, and it's going to be great.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But then, you know, there's so many fun things you can do with the more exotic mushrooms.
Like lion's mane.
Like lion's mane especially. So I'm a meal prep guy because I work all the time. And one of the things I like to do is I'll shred that up, throw it in a sheet pan in the oven and give it a roast. And then I'll just use that instead of lump crab in a crab cake recipe. And I'll make a bunch of them. You know, I'll fire off like 20-30 of them. And you can put them in the fridge, put them in the freezer, and then just throw them in a pan.
Lion's mane crab cakes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You should add some tempeh to that and make a miso sauce. Yeah.
So one of the things you can do with one of our tempehs, the pinto bean and millet, the millet has a little bit of a crunchiness to it. And for whatever reason, I feel like there's a little bit of an Italian vibe with this particular offering is crumbled, cooked in red onions and olive oil, and then onto a tomato sauce with pasta for tempeh bolognese. And it's just quick.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Tempeh bolo. Love it.
Listeners, if you have any kind of cooking questions, recipes, any kind, if you're listening to this going, oh, what do I do with this tempeh that I have? What do I, you know, give us a call. The number is 303-442-4242. We have an entire brain trust in the studio today when it comes to fermented ingredients.
And what makes me thrilled is that, and Justin, I think you know, is that there's a whole family of, it's kind of like high tech or what happened with beer. I mean, that now there's this larger community of mushroom people who are and so now there's a
really coming out of the woodwork. But I'm bumped.
But what it means is that for a long time, you know, there weren't that many local sources. There was the one farm in northern Colorado.
Fort Collins, yeah. Loveland, yeah.
Yeah. And they helped to introduce...
Hazel Dell. Yeah.
And they do a wonderful job. Phenomenal. And they produce a lot of different varieties. And you've probably seen them at the farmer's market. It's that kind of... and I assume that both of you essentially... You're in an educational ambassador role at the farmer's market.
Lots of interesting questions, I'm sure you guys
absolutely
have.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think mushrooms are one of those cool understudied and under-pioneered areas. You know, one of the first pieces of literature that opened my world was a book called Mushrooms Demystified, you know, and it's just the title itself is very telling. You know, everybody goes in the woods, oh, don't eat the mushrooms. You know, it's scary. Could hurt you. Could kill you.
Right.
Could do all sorts of things. And, I think that I've seen a huge growth in people's awareness, you know, both around. We've been getting a ton of publicity in terms of medicinal benefits, antioxidant benefits, all that kind of stuff, as well as just the culinary possibilities. So we're constantly trying to educate and spread that knowledge.
And there's a dialogue also about the interconnectedness of mycelium and how these threads literally live on the planet and connect huge, vast bioregions with their little amazing intuitive feelers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We do have a caller. Nancy.
Oh, great.
Nancy, you're on the air.
Hey, Nancy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I'm finding this a fascinating discussion, but I have a very simple question. Where can I go to buy some of these amazing sounding tempehs?
That's a wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. So our tempehs are sold in several local stores. We're in Lucky's Market on North Broadway in the freezer section. Mm-hmm. Of course, since our tempeh is actually still a living food, so we're selling it in the freezer fresh frozen as opposed to in the refrigerator pasteurized. We're also sold at a new and wonderful package-free grocer on East Walnut, just a stone's throw from the radio station here,
yes.
Which is Nude Foods Market.
Yeah, been there.
And a few other spots real quick, Black Cat Farm Stand on J Road, Mountain People's Co-op up in Ned, and Fresh Times Marketplace actually just opened a bodega on 30th Street, and they will be serving the tempeh both food service capacity and retail.
That's great.
Yep.
And what was the one that was the one after Need, what did you say, Black Eyed Farm?
Black Cat Farms is a wonderful farm stand on J Road. We're using their chickpeas, so just off Diagonal Highway. And then after Nude Foods, the one I mentioned is Fresh Times Bodega, which is a brand new store that Fresh Times Marketplace just opened. It's wonderful.
That's great. Fresh Times, exceptional restaurant. And Black Cat Farm produces amazing ingredients and hogs and other awesome, vibrant, delicious, local agriculture-related ingredients at their restaurants, Black Cat and Bramble and Hare, both downtown Boulder. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Skokin family, amazing people.
Does that help?
Thank you. Yeah, that's all I wanted. Thanks for your help.
Hey, thank you.
We actually have another caller, if you're ready. Sam
awesome.
Lafayette. Good morning, Sam.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling. I have I have twin boys who are almost 14 months old, and I'm curious as to some easy recipes to introduce mushrooms to them, and maybe for future recipes, what recommendations of where to look online would be.
Ooh, wow, yeah, so... I'll circle back just very quickly to the crab cake, because I've had just so many people that say, oh, I don't even like mushrooms, and they eat those and they can't even believe it. You know, I myself became allergic to shellfish at 20. So that's a great one. But there's so many fun things that you can do. I have a kid
friendly though.
Kid friendly. Let's see.
Young kid.
Yeah. I mean, my little ones, I mean, you know, mushrooms are a huge part of our home life experience. And I had my little ones, you know, enjoying awesome grilled oyster mushrooms and lion's mane. Really just very simple olive oil and sea salt. And just, you know, braise slowly in a cast iron pan or, you know, a quick sear on the grill.
And then you add, and then you can put ketchup on top.
You could, right. Well, you know, it'd be nice to get kids attracted to other less sweet,
but what we're talking
crazy
about is
flavors.
How do you,
little miso in there. Whisk in a little miso. That's highly medicinal living foods.
Again, though, we're talking about 14-month-old kids, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to start with something that they already eat, and make it accessible. So
pureed.
Do they eat interesting flavors?
Well,
or spices?
Yeah, they eat a lot of lentils and cabbage, and we try to throw some sauerkraut on their. What they do with it.
Oh, that's great.
These are very hip for 14-month-olds.
Yes, well done.
I mean,
because I must say that's
because I was going to suggest that you could take say lion's mane. Cut it in little cubes, saute it or roast it so it gets a little flavor, and then
caramelized, yeah.
Yeah, and then make a simple, if you're vegan, you could use coconut milk and make a simple creamed you know, cream of mushroom, in effect.
I'll say as well with the lion's mane, which is a great one to integrate just because it's got such a plethora of health benefits.
It's not too mushroomy.
Totally, you know, and it takes up other flavors very well, so it's something that I think it makes an excellent vegan sloppy joe, or sometimes I'll even shred that down and I'll marinate it and I'll make like a taco meat out of that. So it's something that you can sub in any of the places that you would put meat.
Like you could do a chorizo, lion's mane chorizo.
Absolutely,
would be great, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one other quick and easy option I haven't had in a while, but growing up in an Italian household, is the baked portobello mushrooms with balsamic vinegar. And this actually brings to mind for a kid-friendly situation. We used to put bagels or English muffins in the oven, and you make English muffin pizza. You could probably do that with portobello
bagels,
mushrooms as well.
Mm-hmm. Portobello pizza.
Or basic mushroom parmesan.
I got one more for you. We do a pink oyster during the summer, and
it's
beautiful. That one, if you pan fry that on a really high heat, it'll crisp up, and it's got this characteristic like bacon where it's crunchy, but it melts in your mouth.
100%.
And so it's an excellent substitute for anywhere you would put bacon. Throw it up with some eggs. You can put it in.
It looks like coral. Well, I mean, really, when you look at Justin's mushrooms, like literally just placed very simply in a basket, it's like a breathtaking experience.
You can make an MLT. MLT.
Mm-hmm. Mushroom, lettuce, and tomato. Oh, you mean mushroom, lettuce, and tempeh? Delicious sandwich. Ooh. MLT. That's awesome. There you go.
You still need the tomato.
Totally.
And the mayo, for that matter.
And the mayo. Yeah, tempeh bacon.
Does that answer your question, Sam?
Yeah. Place for later to check out that I should keep on my list.
I didn't catch that.
Is there what was it to check out?
Websites that I should look at as resources.
Oh yeah, your websites.
For later?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can find us online at mycocosmmushrooms.com.
One word.
Perfect.
Correct. Yeah, one word. Mm-hmm.
And our website for the tempeh is projectumami.net.
Okay. Thank you, Sam.
And since we're talking about availability, where are your mushrooms available?
So right now they're available at Boulder County Farmers Market Saturdays and Wednesdays. They are, of course, always available at River and Woods next to some beautiful pan-fried trout.
Yes.
Ashkara, as well as a number of other local restaurants. I did just have a conversation with the produce manager at Lucky's last week, so hopefully we'll be having them available there as well.
Great.
And I've also been chatting with Nude Foods as well, so we're hoping to get some more retail outlets established shortly here.
Yeah, Nude Foods is a very cool market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have another caller, Chris, in Boulder. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Really enjoying the discussion.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
I just have a couple recipes and a quick comment about in terms of mushrooms are really a big...
Hello?
Chris, you are breaking up. If you could move to an area with better cell phone reception.
Okay. How's this?
That's better.
Okay. I was saying I'm a big fan of the bolete mushrooms that you can find in the upper montane forest here in Colorado. I do a lot of hiking up there, and I find those quite a bit every year. In terms of miso, someone was asking about how to use miso. I've got a couple of recipes, quick recipes, that everyone always asks me how they're made, and they want the recipe because they taste so good. I use the dark, rich brown rice miso from Miso Master, and I put it in salad dressing. I use apple cider vinegar, olive oil, garlic.
That's great.
Herb, and the dark miso, and it makes an excellent salad dressing.
Great.
Awesome. Yeah, very true.
The other one is a lentil soup or lentil stew. Make up some lentils with vegetables, and at the very end, after it's done cooking, add the miso, and it turns into a really hearty stew that complements the lentils really well. So those are two really good ways to use miso.
That's great.
So I have a question for you. You sound like you're a veteran forager, hiker. Talk to me a little bit about foraging etiquette. What you do and what you don't do, besides not tell anyone where you get them.
Well, in terms of the boletes, I for one try not to take everything I see, you know.
Exactly.
That's great.
And the boletes, animals do chew on those. So I definitely want to leave some for the little critters up there who depend on them for a food source.
That's great.
You know, the boletes are an interesting type of mushroom. They're not gills underneath. It's more of a spongy material underneath the cap. But in terms of the spores, you know, I think covering up, you know, the area after you're done is good as well.
Just show respect.
Being respectful and thoughtful.
You know, in terms of picking them, you know, you don't want to take one that's a little past its prime and is a little slimy. You get them that are fairly fresh as well. So,
well, also I would add that one of the pieces of knowledge that I received from that trip to in Guajimaloyas is that when you pick the mushroom, either get just a small kind of dull knife and cut it, or twist it. Don't pull it straight up, because if you pull it straight up, you're going to damage the root system or the mycelium system.
Sure.
So, you know, kind of twist and pull up, or you know, preferably a gentle cut, you know, and then cover it back up.
One thing I would add to that is I always like to go foraging with a mesh bag, just so everywhere I'm walking, I'm spore dusting that entire environment. Anytime you harvest a mature mushroom, it's going to continue dropping spores as you're banging around walking through the mountains. So mesh bag makes it really easy to just spread the love around.
So you're
very well said.
So you're Johnny Mushroom Seed.
Yes, sir.
Johnny Mushroom Spore.
Catchy. That should be a song.
Exactly. Yeah.
We'll have t-shirts available on our website.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Thank you so much
That's
for your
great.
Question.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up, you know, great ways to use miso. I feel miso is a very underutilized and not familiar ingredient for most folks. So however we can promote fermented foods like miso that have a very ancient cultural lineage, I think is extremely important, and not just sharing the language of food globally, but in very smart uses medicinally of phenomenal ingredients that bring us a lot of joy.
And what this all brings to mind for me is that sometime soon, maybe this summer, who knows, we should have some kind of event where people can taste all the mushroom foods.
Yes.
All the, you know, where you're,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, so they go.
A fermentation festival.
Yes, but not strictly, but.
Sure.
I just feel like if people actually tasted your tempeh prepared simply, you know, with oil and aminos, like the when I tasted
you
it.
You do that at the farmer's market?
Yeah, yeah, we sample at the market, and it's funny. People
and
just...
And I assume you don't actually...
They do. Yeah.
With mushrooms, I think people look at them and they don't... You know, if you're an adventurer in the kitchen and all that, you go, oh, I can... I'll just, you know, cook up some of that and see how it tastes. I think sometimes...
They can also be intimidating, you think?
Well, I think sometimes you need you need someone to cook it, and maybe even cook it in front of them and go, this is how simple it is. Taste this.
Like a mushroom concierge of sorts.
Yes, or a sommelier of fungi.
Yes,
yeah.
Totally.
That's the most common thing at the farmer's market, you know, is people come up and they're like kind of gawking at them like...
What the hell is that?
That's beautiful. It looks like a bouquet. I have no idea what I would do with it, you know. And
what is the reception? What are the most popular varieties that people request or that are, you know, they gravitate towards?
Ooh, you know, so in years prior, the pink oyster was definitely our best seller. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Nowadays, a tremendous amount of lion's mane. People are really, really, really into the lion's
That's
mane.
Great. Mm-hmm. You can also dehydrate it and use the powder.
Which, and we're doing that as well as we're rolling out a number of different products that are incorporating lion's mane into
Oh, that's great.
And things like that.
And add to smoothies and...
Absolutely.
Hey, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Well, we are in the final stretch of this program. We are not going to be taking any more callers, but we do need to give Dennis Ryder a chance to set up during the Morning Sound Alternative. Let's go to final thoughts, wrapping it up.
I just have one thought that I can't help but sharing. My passion is the health benefits of the food that, you know, we're eating, providing, and pulling from the environment. The miso paste, to utilize the health benefits to the fullest extent, should not be prepared above 140 degrees. And that's so that the enzymes are not denatured. And I think that's just great to share with everyone.
And that's our guest today, Griffin Giordano of Project Umami, the tempeh maker. Final thoughts, Justin?
I think, you know, it's really cool to bring awareness to these nature of things, because I think so many of the great culinary traditions of the past have been bestowed upon us by circumstances of limitation. You know, food preservation. Mm. Oh, it's the middle of winter. What do we have? These three things. So what kind of things can we make out of them? And the fermentation products and, you know, the decomposers and these kinds of things have given rise to, you know, foods that are not only delicious, but have such a multitude of health benefits when it comes to digestion and other things. And, you know, in an era where we can go to the grocery store and get anything, any time of year, I'm grateful that there are people in our community that see the importance of keeping those kind of culinary traditions alive and just bringing awareness and appreciation to some of those things.
And that's
awesome.
That's Justin.
Very well said.
Justin Killing of Mycocosm, and thanks also for being here, Dan Asher.
Happy graduation week to our CU folks. And this happy Mother's Day on coming up on Sunday. Restaurants are booming, so thanks for supporting your local independent restaurant experience. Eat early, eat often.
And thank you to all the callers. This was an amazing experience for us to connect with all of you. And we're happy to say that we're going to be back on the first Thursday of every month.
Yes.
With more local culinary guests and
awesome, more
discussion, more calls.
Farmers, growers, food artisans, makers, people that are changing, impacting, and enhancing our local vibrant and connected food scene.
And if you're interested, you can email me, johnlendorf@gmail.com, if you'd like to be involved.
Spell your name.
You know, this is why I got into journalism. I thought if I stayed in it for 40 years, the people could spell it, but they can't. JohnLehnDorff. And, of course, you can read me every week, like today in the Boulder Weekly.